It's simple. It's dumb. It's the podcast.
This episode, we'll be talking with a big fan of Granddaddy, who also happens to be a close friend of Jason Lytle's. He's a musician, a fellow lover of the outdoors, and someone I was privileged to meet while on the Lost Machine Orchestra tour just a couple years ago. This week's guest is Kurt Foster. Foster's a longtime singer-songwriter, most notably for the band Sunday State and Mission Spotlight. In fact, after Kurt was introduced to Jason Lytle by Giant Sand frontman Hal Gelb, Foster quickly became good friends with Jason. And there are a bunch of connections and stories to explore. While Hal will find his own episode soon enough, this episode is all Kurt. So let's dive in.
And so we always start out an episode with wanting to hear how you first came across the band Granddaddy.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. How will come up more than once. I'm a long storyteller, so I'll try to keep things as tight as possible. But essentially, I saw Giant Sand, I think, for the first time in 1994.
I just said goodbye to my lover, Loretta, for the last time. No more would she lie, nor would I upset her. We wish the same to no one. There was liquor needed 5 miles down a dangerous road. Got me plenty of nothing right here. If I need to explode.
And was just completely leveled by them, which, you know, fast forward became a connecting point for Jason and I. But yeah, so saw them and met Hal after the show and just became an instant huge fan of them, and kind of ended up staying in touch with Hal. You know, we shared some common love of different music and things. And anyway, those are early days of me having an email address, and ended up emailing with him and chatting with him. And I one time I was in Vegas, actually, of all places, visiting a friend with a bunch of my bandmates at the time, a band called Worthington. And I got an email from Hal saying, "Hey, wherever you are, go and find this album and listen to it." It was Under the Western Freeway, the Granddaddy album.
So
also drove through Tower Records in the good old days in Vegas, bought it, and then I think we were there for 3 or 4 days, drinking ourselves stupid and having a good time driving around, playing the album over and over and over. So I immediately was hooked on it, and I think that was 97. I'm terrible at timelines, so forgive me and also anyone listening if I screw up any dates. But and then ended up seeing them at a venue that I was playing a lot at the time, which was Satyricon, kind of a famous dumpy place in Portland, the music lore of Portland, Satyricon. And that was the tour where he had the forest on stage, the tiny, tiny little stage, and they had all the trees and everything. You could barely see the band. I think that was by Jason's design, so could barely see Jason. And so that was kind of my introduction to the band. Here I sit. I guess in terms of like how I, if you want me to jump into how I met Jason.
Well, maybe first, what kind of music were you listening to at the time when you heard Granddaddy? Was it like anything that you were a fan of, or was it just completely in the opposite direction?
Yeah, I mean, you know, at the time, like a couple of years before that, I caught, you know, Radiohead for the first time just on a whim, like, ended up with a ticket and went to the show without really knowing much about them, and you know, so that was kind of happening. You know, I at the time was a huge fan of things like Guided by Voices and Arches of Loaf, and like I said, the band I was in at the time was definitely kind of in that scene. We were here in Portland at the time that Elliott Smith was still doing his thing, and met him at the studio where we were recording, just Jackpot with Larry Crane and Quasi, and all, you know, there was a lot of going on in Portland specifically. But in terms of a band that it reminded me of, you know, it felt familiar but also completely different. I think Jason, the way he composes music, well, I use the word compose, I think that's what I find so amazing and interesting about listening to his music, but also having kind of worked with him on things, is just how he thinks about how song structure and how it's created. Obviously, there's a lot of familiar elements to it, and whether it's the more rocking tunes or the quieter kind of ballady stuff that he does, it's just, there's a beauty to it, and sometimes it's so incredibly simple, but so perfectly and masterfully kind of put together. So yeah, I mean, I guess I was listening to a lot of things that, you know, it wasn't like this major left turn, like some crazy, wacky band, but it was like, holy cow, man, when I heard that record, I was just like, this is really special, you know, and then obviously more amazing albums came you know, after that. So, yeah, it immediately became one of my constant listen tos, you know, catching them live many times after that and everything just sort of fueled that fire.
Okay, so now you were about to tell a story about how you met Jason, so let's go to that next, if you don't mind.
Yeah. I was like, man, I probably should write this down, otherwise it's bouncing around too much. But yeah, basically, fast forward to, and again, I'm terrible at dates, but it's been probably 8 or 9 years ago now, at least, yeah. About 8 or 9 years ago. Was in Portland, and once again, Hal texted me and was like, "Hey, I'm in town working on something. Are you around?" And I was in town, so he's like, "Oh, let's meet up for a beer, have a drink, catch up." And so we met up at this place not far from my house, and he said, "Oh, my buddy's going to stop by too as well." I was like, "Oh, cool, right on." And I think at that time I said, oh, I'll call Larry Crane. I mentioned him earlier, like, you know, at that time was pretty much the main guy I'd made records with over the years, and Larry knew how. And so Larry was on his way as well, came to hang out. And then I don't know why I hadn't thought it was Jason. I guess I knew that Jason had moved to Portland just through reading something at some point, or I guessed at it that he was in Portland, but I hadn't put together that I was in Portland working with Jason. So anyway, Jason walks in the door, and of course I'm like, oh, no, of course it's Jason. And of course I'm like trying to keep it cool, because as much as I've been around amazing musicians, that was like, oh wow, okay, can I have a drink with Jason Lytle? So he sat down next to me, and we immediately just started chatting and trying my hardest not to be the fanboy that I am of him and the band. But we kind of, I think we ended up talking about a lot of stuff. Well, I think almost immediately we were talking about, if I remember right, it's like we were talking about, well, Portland and his move to Portland and what he was doing in Portland. And so that obviously covered a lot of ground. And then we were talking about outdoor stuff. And, you know, immediately we connected on that. He was really into trail running and, you know, mountain biking. And so fast forward, he got me into trail running, and we started mountain biking together. I think maybe even the following weekend, I picked him up, jumped in my van, and we went, I think, mountain biking on the weekend. And so we just ended up kind of hitting it off and talking about music. And either that night or soon after, we were talking a lot about old country music and a shared love of that. And I think when I picked him up to go mountain biking, it was an adorable Jason moment where he handed me the CD. He jumped in the van and handed me a CD. He's like, hey, man, I don't know if you know my work. I don't think we even talked about Granddaddy yet, even at the bar with Hal and Larry were catching up, and Jason and I were talking about mountain biking in Portland and stuff. So he hopped in and handed me a copy of Department of Disappearance. And I had to, you know, again, was trying not to be like, you know, overly over-the-top fan guy, but I was just was like, oh, yeah, cool, man. Yeah, definitely, I'll check it out. And I'm like, oh, man, you know how many times I've listened to that album.
Dear's dying, darling, please forgive me, he said.
I told him not long after, because we just kind of continued being friends and hanging out and doing lots of stuff together. So yeah, again, it just goes back to Hal being the main connection point, which even not too long ago we were talking about it. I think it was on the tour recently in Europe that we were talking about Hal and the whole connection, and how Jason came, you know, into Hal's life and vice versa, and Jason hearing Giant Sand for the first time, which is very similar to me, which was just like, holy cow, this is unlike anything I've ever heard, mixed with like all kinds of influences and things that we love.
The cliffs up here were only meant to ponder. Roads down there built for you to wander. Go ahead and leave the girl you're fond of. Bring home big old pile of wonder.
So, yeah, how was the reason that Jason and I met? And then, you know, a shared love of the outdoors and music is kind of where it went from there.
Jason lived in Portland for a few years, obviously, after he left Montana. It seems from interviews that I've read that he had trouble kind of feeling like Portland was home. I think he had a relationship that was really falling apart, and I think was difficult for him to stomach at times. And so I kind of like almost like the Picasso era. It's like the Portland era of Jason has a very distinct style in a lot of those songs that he wrote when he was there in Portland. And you obviously met him, knew him during those years when he was in Portland. What can you talk about just like his mindset when he was there? What can you tell us about just who he was when he was in Portland and maybe why he didn't love it as much as others do?
Yeah, it's funny. It became quite apparent pretty quickly when we started hanging out that things weren't great, going very well with his now ex, and I think he wasn't, he moved to a pretty, what I would call a pretty rough part of Portland, not really probably necessarily knowing exactly where to land. Of course, he made the best of it, but, you know, and it was a, and I kept telling him, oh man, which you tell everybody that comes to Portland in the winter, oh, you're just, you know, it's not usually like this, which is a total lie. so it was very wet, and Jason is and anyone listening knows, a diehard California guy. So I was really pitching hard, trying to be the unofficial mayor of Portland, like, no, man, it's really great. And the other thing I just love about Jason is that he's just not really a scenester, you know, he's not looking to like necessarily join the community. He's not against it, but he didn't come to Portland to just kind of suddenly become a part of the music scene. I think it was sort of a compromise in terms of like trying to find city life again after moving from Montana, but not being like a big city and having nature nearby and everything. So he was obviously, I mean, I didn't know how he was previous to that. But one thing I realized quite quickly about the difference between, you know, Jason and I, and which I got really clear with him on, when we met, is like, you know, I'm a real people person and extroverted and love to do stuff. And if I like something or like somebody, I want to hang out even more. And Jason's obviously a quieter soul and perhaps obviously more introverted and very comfortable in his own skin, be on his own. So I think just in terms of our relationship, how we became, you know, such good friends, was just an acknowledgement of that and just being like aware of that with him. And I think that also helped when he was in a pretty tough spot, a very tough spot, living in a new city in the winter, rainy, wet, nasty weather, not really knowing the landscape. You know, he did a lot of exploring on his own, trying to find bits of nature within the city, which he's always a genius at doing, as well as exploring outside of town. Amongst all that, trying to make music, continuing on with music, and to your question, you know, obviously the songs, you know, the amazing privilege I had was like some of these songs that ended up on the last Granddaddy record were ones that he played me in my living room before they were done or recorded, and, you know, would give me CDs of rough takes and stuff. So it was pretty, you know, personally for me, obviously pretty magical to be around him and in that space as he was going through that. Obviously very tough for him to watch him going through the pain of the divorce and the shifting, you know, life that was happening. I had been through something similar, you know, years earlier. So I think we connected on that, and I tried to be as helpful as possible. While at the same time always being aware that he needed his space to process it the way he needed to process it. But, you know, amongst all that, he created, once again, just unbelievably beautiful music, which anytime I think, you know, that he might just be done, I don't think he ever actually will be, but, you know, the occasional times where he's been sped up or over it, you know, he'll sit down and just crank out some amazing tune that you're just like, you know, where the hell that come from?
Yeah. Everything about us is a lost machine.
So yeah, I think it was, I don't know, you know, I don't want to put words in Jason's mouth, but I think it was a great thing that we kind of connected at the time we did. I felt like I needed him at the time in terms of connecting with him and becoming friends with him for a variety of reasons in my own life, and then him as well, needing sort of somebody to lean on when needed. We have a shared I don't know, struggle sounds overly dramatic, but you know, obviously creative folks and people that deal with the anxieties of life, and if you can write a song, a lot of times that's what can save you from that stuff. I think, you know, he and I, again, we met at a time where you know, hopefully I was helpful to him and vice versa, and I think he, as private as a person as he can be, if you listen closely like you have to the lyrics and the work, there's a lot there about who he is and what he's all about, and he's just such an incredibly sensitive, kind, sweet person, you know, mixed with obviously, like most of us, the anxieties of living life and what that means, and how to do your best, and how not to overthink things, and you know, I've been proud to be his friend, and also just watch him continue to grow and better himself. He's very hard on himself. We share that in common. No matter how well I'm doing at anything, I feel like I'm not doing enough or doing it right or, you know, doing it well. And I think that's a common thread for a lot of musicians I know, and which I think drives you. It's like, if you think you've written your best song, well, you're kind of in a bad spot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You always want to think your best stuff is in front of you. So, yeah. So I think, it's just really cool to see him anytime he gets maybe down about music or the scene or whatever it might be, you know, and I'm slightly like, oh man, is he not going to write another song? And then I'll be like, oh, hey man, here's a new track. Check this out. I'm working on this. And I got, you know, he's going to keep at it, keep doing it. It's who he is. It's what he's all about. And it pisses me off at times how easy it comes to him. He's prolific and amazing in terms of songwriting. So
yeah, that's been a theme in a lot of episodes.
It's he'll go quiet sometimes. You know, we might not talk for a bit. We talk quite often, but you know, I might not hear from him or vice versa. And then suddenly he'll be like, I don't know whether he's been running a lot or biking a lot or disappearing into the Sierras or what he's been doing, or is it, he's been locked away in the studio. Usually it's a combination of all those things.
As I was chronicling a lot of Jason's songs that he's written, played on, covered over the years, one that I had completely been unaware of, I found on floating around on the internet, and that was a cover of One of These Days, a Neil Young song that you and he had played on.
One of these days, I'm gonna sit down and write a long letter to all the good friends I've known, and I'm gonna try and thank them all for the good times together. Though so apart we've grown, one of these days I'm gonna sit down and write a long letter to all the good friends I've known. One of these days, one of these days, one of these days, it won't be long, it won't be long.
And kind of blew my mind. Like it was really, really good. And that was always kind of the exciting part of what I was trying to do, was I was discovering all these new songs that if I really wasn't searching for them, they were not going to like stand out or come to me in any way. So I found that one just through probably like a Google search, to be honest. And talk about that song in particular, that recording, and maybe are there other songs out there like that, that like y'all tried and we were like, ah, that one's not as good or something like that. I'm just curious, like what's the population of songs out there that haven't really ever been, you know, commemorated on the internet?
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I think Jason is wonderfully sneaky about like connecting and collaborating occasionally. And it, you know, not necessarily like making a big deal out of it. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how it happened. Maybe it was the first Christmas, I guess. I'm trying to think. I think we met in the fall, and maybe it was around the first Christmas. And I was, even though I was very involved in music and playing out a lot and busy in the music world myself, I was always really, I'm just not the guy that was gonna be like, hey, Jason Lytle, you want to make some music with me? And I was like, I knew enough of him and had spent enough time with him to know like that's just not how he rolls, and it just has to be kind of organic. And I think that's again how he and how have become such good buddies as well, is that kind of similar mindset. But things happen as they happen. But I think it was some getting up close to Christmas, and I mentioned like that I've always wanted, I said, I just really love this Neil Young song. And it's not a Christmas song, but for some reason it reminds me of Christmas. And I always listen to it at Christmas, this idea of like trying to connect with people, or this idea that I've always, you know, I'm always, you know, or it's come almost a New Year's idea as well. Like, oh, I really need to sit down and write a long letter, as the song goes, to all my good friends and to people, you know, that I haven't connected with and stayed in touch with. And it's kind of this beautiful tune mixed with a little bit of guilt of, you know, maybe not doing the greatest job of staying connected. I think that resonated with him, or he just dug it. And obviously, Neil Young's fan as well.
And I'm gonna think country fiddler and all those rough boys who play that rock and roll. I never tried to burn any bridges, though I know I let some good things go. One of these days, I'm gonna sit down and write a long letter to all the good friends I've known. One of these days, one of these days, one of these days.
I think if I remember right, like he literally just called or texted and was like, hey, let's go over to this guy's house, a buddy of mine I know. I think his name's Brian. Gosh, I'm sorry if it's not, but I believe it's Brian. He ended up playing bass on it. I'd only met him once before, and I think he had gone on a tour around the UK or Ireland with Jason, just doing like an acoustic tour. Anyway, he had a little home studio, and we was a classically gray and rainy day, and we wandered over there into the house and just kind of quickly laid down this song, and you know, didn't overthink it, didn't spend a ton of time, and it was just kind of, it almost felt like a gift, you know, or like a Christmas gift from Jason to me, in terms of like, you know, just hitting me up and say, let's do that song that you dig. And you know, we just did it quickly, and I think he posted it on whatever at the time, Facebook or Instagram or whatever, and I did the same, and it just sort of drifted off into SoundCloud, you know, nothingness. So it sits in there, and I pull it up every Christmas and send it around to friends. It's kind of become a great thing to be to send to the people, like, again, that I don't maybe haven't stayed in touch with throughout the year, to say, like, hey, you know, I'm thinking about you. And we had I remember we just had a lot of laughs kind of doing it. It's a great song, and Jason joking with Brian to make my mic sound not as good as his, and making sure that Jason sounded better than me, and round and round. Anyway, we were going back and forth about who takes what verse and all that, and yeah, just having fun. And yeah, I think it's cool. I dig it. It's always I kind of literally don't listen to it until Christmas time, and I pull it up, and it's always a fun memory.
Yeah, I listen to it today, and what stands out to me is just your voice is very unique. It's a bit bolder of a tone, and then Jason's mm-hmm. voice comes in, and it's so opposite yet complementary in this amazing way that the way you harmonize together. It's great.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about it over the years, like doing something where it was just like real heavy harmonized kind of like blood harmony, mm-hmm. Everly Brothers type thing, you know, what I think would be super fun.
Down in L.A. and all the way to Asheville, New York City, my California home. My friends are scattered like leaves from an old maple. Some are weak and some are strong. One of these days, I'm gonna sit down and write a long letter, all the good friends I've known. One of these days, one of these days, one of these days, it won't be long, it won't be long. One of these days, one of these days, one of these days, it won't be long, it won't be long.
Obviously our voices, like you say, are quite different but complementary, and I think that's, yeah, so to answer your question about other stuff, on my phone and little voice memos, I have all kinds of, well, at least a handful of, like, voice memos of us drinking wine and playing in my living room, or I think camping a few times together or whatever, singing You Are My Sunshine, and like just, you know, simple little folk songs and harmonizing and stuff, which is good memories. And then he ended up, I had a barbershop for years in Portland, and he ended up playing the 1 year anniversary show. I had music there, so I had The Minus Five and Ila Bamba and all these other bands, Portland bands and stuff played. And so Jason came up, I flew him up for the 1 year anniversary, and he ended up seeing Plastic Jesus and You Are My Sunshine and some other songs together. And I think we've always really enjoyed singing together. So
he did Take somehow. On Me as well and during that show, I think, right?
Yeah. he did an amazing version of that in a very crowded barbershop. It was a really fun night.
We're talking away. I don't know what I'm to say. I'll say it anyway. Today's another day to find him shying away. I'll be coming for your love, okay? Day or two.
realize that barbershop was yours. I remember seeing that he had played it, and I remember thinking at the time, like, that's an odd show to take on if you're Jason Lytle, but it makes a lot more sense now.
Yeah, no, it's like, again, a testament to him. Like, he's, I'm sure it's been covered in the podcast and elsewhere. It's like, you know, I think he loves playing out, I think, on some level, but it's cause for strength, you know. Stress can be stressful and not always fun. And I have a similar relationship with playing live. It's like driven to do it. And then you're just before you do it, you're like, why am I doing this to myself? And then you do it. And then you're like, oh, that was the greatest thing ever. I should do it again. And it's like, you know, kind of self-abuse mixed with, you know, self-esteem issues or whatever. But yeah, I think, you know, I always was with Jason, always just very much like, hey man, if it feels right, do it. If not, no sweat at all. And I mentioned it, and he was kind enough to be like, no man, that sounds fun. He's really into kind of the low-key stuff. Like, he played a couple shows in Portland that were just amazing, like just tiny little venues where it was just me and my handful of my friends, and I remember my father-in-law was in town from New Zealand, my wife's from New Zealand, and we had hung out, my father-in-law and Jason and myself and wife and a few others had hung out, I think it was a couple nights before a gig, and Jason and my father-in-law had hit it off, and then my father-in-law was going to be at the show, and Jason was like, I'm just really nervous to play in front of him. He's just a really cool guy. And I'm just thinking, holy cow, man, we're just in this tiny, tiny little bar, and you're worried about, you know, this funny old guy, sweet older guy from New Zealand, you know, judging your music or whatever. But yeah, so he's amazing because he can, you know, it can be 5 people or 20 people or 2,000 people, and he goes through the same process of wanting to do a killer job and be at his best, you know, and try to enjoy it as best he can as well.
Yeah. Were you at the house show that he did and recorded and released on, I guess it was Bandcamp or something, but he had this like,
yeah. So that was actually tying that all together, that was actually the house where we recorded the Neil Young song.
Oh, okay.
And that, I believe, yeah, I'm pretty sure I know that right. And I was out of town. That was the week or weekend that I met Jason. So that was how I was in town. Jason and Hal did that house show and kind of each did songs together. So it was during that time was when Jason and I met for the first time.
That's one of my favorite live recordings of Jason is that house show. Like some of those stripped down versions of the various songs. Oh, so good.
Is how it always starts. Dumb choices from the heart. Ah, shit, I can't let them see me like this. Nothing sweet.
I kicked myself because I was out of town for work and I missed it in person, but the recording is fantastic.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to a bit bigger of shows. Let's talk about this Lost Machine Orchestra tour that just took place. I guess it was earlier this year. It seems like it's flown by since then, but in 2022,
I know, right?
I guess it was around April timeframe, if I'm not mistaken. Jason had announced some
Yep.
shows with a French orchestra, and it was going to be covering the Software Slump as well as some other celebrated granddaddy classics. And immediately when I found out about it, I told my wife, I'm gonna have to take off work for some time because he's not gonna do this in the US, and I need to go over
Yep.
there and see as many shows as possible. And so that's what I did. I saw the last four shows in the UK. And
Yeah.
I think that was like the perfect amount for me. I was kind of ready to go home at the end of it all, but it was such a great experience for me. But I'd like to talk to you about,
Yeah.
how it came about, how you got involved, and how it kind of played
Yeah.
out for you.
Yeah, I mean, again, in the spirit of embracing kind of random organic occurrences or whatever, however you want to put it, not long before, I guess the fall before that, October before that spring, my family and I, well, a couple of years before, had made a decision to move to Germany. So we did that, which is, long story, very hard, difficult decision to leave Portland after 25, 28 years or whatever it's been, and leave my band, physically leave my bands behind here and tons of friends and just, yeah, community here. But moved to Germany, and so yeah, I remember hearing about him doing this. I think he had mentioned he was going to come over, looking like he was going to come over in spring and do this tour. And I was like, oh, awesome, man. Same thing. I thought the same thing. I'm like, oh, I'm at least going to catch, two or three of these shows while he's over. And long story short, he just connected. We connected at some point, and he just like, hey, how would you feel about coming along on the tour and doing some backing vocals? And I was like, nah, no, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I was like, sure, absolutely, count me in. That sounds fun. One of many things I love about Jason and that we share in common is just like, how do we turn a fun thing into something even more fun? And so we started talking about, logistics and how that would work. And he's sharing with me kind of the set list as it's starting to take shape. And 'cause I was a little bit like, what is it's an orchestra and where are we going? Well, I was just like, count me in for whatever it is, but didn't really exactly know extent of it or how long. And even he was still kind of getting information coming back from the orchestra and from the guy managing things in Europe. And so yeah, we just kind of like went through the process together, and I just said, hey, let me know, where it starts, where it ends, and what you need from me in the meantime. And basically what we came up with was like, let's turn this into even more fun for us and like low stress, enjoy it as much as possible. I said, hey, why don't I drive? I just bought a van living over here. I'll drive to where we're going to start rehearsals in Paris, and then we'll take our own van, and be able to, obviously we have a shared love of biking. I said, I've got a couple of bikes. I'll throw them in the back of the van. And that way we're not tied to the schedule necessarily of the orchestra and everybody, the crew, and, doing a lot of standing around when we don't necessarily have to, and we'll go riding bikes. So it just ended up being this kind of wonderful thing where we kind of had our own schedule, and we just jumped in the van when we needed to, and we'd do a few miles, and Jason would do some Googling on the phone and find some place to ride bikes. We'd ride bikes for a couple hours and grab lunch and then, you know, roll into the next venue. So it was this awesome combination of just hanging out together, listening to music on the drive, talking about stuff, catching up about life in general, riding bikes, and then all of a sudden we're wandering into these, you know, amazing venues to play these amazing shows. So it was I keep going back through it because I don't want to forget any of the details of it, because it was just this kind of wonderfully magic few weeks hanging out and getting to sing these songs that I've lived with for so many years that mean so much to me, and spend time with a dear friend and then hear them in those places, let alone with the orchestra and everything. It was very stressful at first, but when it all came together, you know, in terms of the music itself, it was just like every night was just like, holy smokes, this is unbelievable. There wasn't one night that I didn't get misty-eyed, because it was just no matter how many times we sang or rehearsed them or whatever, it was just truly, truly great. So yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, the venues, you mentioned them, they were so different that it was almost like a different experience. Yeah. And I only saw four shows. I think there were nine in total, if I'm not mistaken. But
yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, but like the Palladium, I remember just being floored, and that was a night after Bexhill, which was a bit more smaller, abstract kind of building, and then Manchester Hall was after the Palladium, and that's felt like you were in a church seeing that show. Just amazing venues.
Yeah.
I loved them. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Palladium was, that was just totally surreal to step on that stage. I mean, it's a stage that I've watched YouTube footage of Roy Orbison and the Beatles and Ray Charles, you know, just all kinds of my heroes over the years playing on that stage. So to step out on that stage, I mean, both Jason and I don't think he said it on stage, we're nervous, to put it mildly. And it, you know, it wasn't anything different from the nights before, other than the venue just having this unbelievable kind of vibe about it. And, you know, there's the Queen's box up on the left, or, you know, where she would sit and watch shows and stuff. She didn't show up that night, but the space itself, just the intimidating space itself, was a lot. But once we got into it, and I think once he just said pretty much at the top of the show, okay, this is a little little intimidating, little scary.
Yeah.
He got into it, and we had a great night. But yeah, it was really interesting. The Bexhill show, like you say, smaller, probably, you know, 1970s style building or whatever, and then you have the Palladium, which is this, you know, beautiful, like you say, almost church-like setting, and Albert Hall in mm-hmm. Manchester again, like this unbelievably beautiful space, and then Glasgow being the last night was again kind of more of a concert hall, like more, you know, I don't know when it was built, but more of a modern building. So yeah, each night had a little different thing, and each crowd was a little different. Like in Paris, the crowd was weeping, you know, people on the front, you know, I had a lot of time between my moments of singing a thing to watch the crowd, and they're just losing their minds in a beautiful way, and so moved and touched by it, and but also raucous. Like 20 minutes after we were done, they were still asking for an encore after, you know, two or three encores already.
Yeah.
And other crowds were more subdued and mellow because it's, you know, again, it's an orchestra and it's quieter, but then they would, you know, at the end of each song, they would just completely lose their minds and go crazy. So yeah, it was interesting, the different venues, the different spaces and places and the different crowds and cultures that we're kind of witnessing. It was fun to watch. Pictures and even video clips and all that don't necessarily do it justice, or mm-hmm. definitely don't, because I think the sound quality and the orchestration and the way those songs all came together was just so unbelievably great. But yeah, I mean, just to be a part of it was amazing. Like, and at the Palladium, after I think we had sound check, I wandered over with my buddy from the UK he also came along on three or four of the UK ones, and we went into a pub across the street. Guy was like, comes up to me and grabs me and throws his arm around me. He's like, man, I was at the Bexhill show last night. It was so amazing. And he's getting like emotional and like misty-eyed. He pulls up his sleeve and he's got lyrics on his arm written out from Software Slump. And he's like, obviously die-hard fan, yeah, and just going yeah. off and taking pictures with me and like acting like I'm, you know, I've been in granddaddy forever or whatever. I'm like, I don't know what you're going to want a picture of me for, but yeah, cool, man. I'm happy to be a part of it, you know? So it was really, really cool to see. I obviously knew, but it was really cool to see how passionate the crowd was. And going, you know, you mentioned Modesto, like years earlier, just before band was heading out on tour, I was on my way again, once again, to Vegas to see a friend, and drove down to Modesto and talked to him in Modesto, and obviously got to see kind of behind the curtain of the local Modesto scene and all these people that grew up with granddaddy and that town, living in that town. And that was, you know, to have seen that, which was so cool to witness and be a part of, kind of the homegrown version of it, and then, you know, be stepping on these stages in Europe is, yeah, like you say, a testament to the work, to the songs themselves, which are just unbelievable, you know.
Okay, I think we spent a lot of time on other topics, but now let's talk about maybe one of your favorite Granddaddy songs or Jason songs in general.
yeah, you mentioned that would be a thing, and of course that's so hard depending on how I look at it or listen to it, between the songs that we sang together on the tour or songs that I heard for the first time before they were recorded and that sort of thing. But the one that keeps coming back to me, and I think it was because maybe a year ago I texted him and was like, I was literally in tears driving somewhere listening to Ghost of My Old Dog on the first solo record, and there's something, and I was like, I don't even know why I'm getting emotional, man. I don't even really totally understand what the song is about. And he's like, that's all right, neither do I.
And she would know.
So my very clear understanding of his love of animals and pets. And when we first met, he had a little dog, Tiki, that he was incredibly close with. And so there's that. But just the overall, like, going back to talking about composing or the composition of that song, the way it builds kind of slowly and arcs into this amazing chorus and then does the same thing again. And Jason's a master of kind of adding elements. You know, it's an acoustic guitar to, I think, acoustic guitar with some drums, to adding the bass, adding the electric guitar, you know, kind of staggering things and building things. And it's, you know, obviously not a new idea, but the way he does it is so kind of emotional that, again, whether you know exactly what he's talking about from one line to the next, that the overall tone and sound of it is so beautiful, in almost a kind of classical music kind of sense. I mean, again, there's so many others. I'm terrible with song titles, but there's so many others with that I have memories with. But that one, for some reason, is the one when it comes on, I'm just like, everybody shut up. I'm listening to this song. Or it's a great one, like I say, while driving. It's just, it's just an epic, big, beautiful song.
Yeah, after the first verse, I think it ends with, but they're all gone now to earth and bed. And there's like this weird pause right there for like almost two full seconds, it feels like. And then the guitar comes back in. And I don't know why I love that part so much, but the pause, that absence of sound, is so great in that song for me. It's so strange.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly right. I think that adds to that emotional thing to it, where you just, you don't know exactly why, but it just strikes a chord. It's just a beauty. But so many of his songs are that way. I'll text him quite often when I'm listening to songs, being like, yeah, man, just so you know. And my kids are absolutely... It's funny, I think that the solo albums or Jason albums, you know, which could quite easily be called Granddaddy albums, but they're very close to my heart, because they were the ones I was listening to when we met. And then my son was maybe 2 years old at the time, and he would not let a day go by where I didn't play Willow Wand, which was another one that I thought about when you mentioned favorite songs. But, you know, then obviously so many Granddaddy songs, it just could be hours and hours talking about the music, but there's a common thread of just emotional elements that he just taps into so amazingly, whether they're kind of rocking songs or whether they're quieter songs, you're just never bored. I'm always just captured by the song. So it's and that in itself is unlike a lot of other music that I might listen to. You know, there's no skipping tracks. I'm moving on and on the albums. Like, you just always want to listen to everything.
Yeah, this track, I think it's only the second one, maybe, I guess, depending on where I air this episode, that was not a Granddaddy track. That was a solo track. And I was really excited when you mentioned this one because of that, because I feel like his solo albums are just as amazing as the Granddaddy albums are. They really are. Like, I'm super excited for this new Blue Wave album. I think it could maybe be the best thing he's ever done before. I don't know, but I'm really excited to hear it and see what that ends up sounding like too.
Yeah, I've been frustrated too, because I think those Jason Lytle records are absolutely magic, and they're no reason they shouldn't be as listened to or as loved as the Granddaddy records. But I think so many solo artists have gone through this, where, you know, whatever sales reflect that people love the band idea, you know, because, you know, they're stuck in that space, which is totally understandable from a Granddaddy standpoint. But anyone listening to this, if for some reason you haven't listened to those records or haven't listened to them recently, like, they're just great. In many of the same ways that any Granddaddy record is. So.
Yeah. Well, one more thing on Ghost of My Old Dog that I was thinking about on this song. I wrote this down, but like, it's kind of a commentary on how he has these self-perception issues about what he thinks may be viewed as weird by outsiders. But instead of, you know, like, he's like highlighting that in this song, and what's really strange to me is that he almost writes it through the lens of an outsider watching him do this. And so some of the lyrics are like, "Don't yell at me because you can't see," and then later on it's like, "I guess you caught me, you won't stop me." Like, he's like in an argument with somebody about it in his head. It's really brilliant lyrics, I think, but it just makes me laugh because I feel like that's probably just like Jason might be kind of in real life. I don't know.
Thanks to Kurt Foster for such a great interview. As I think I mentioned already, this was recorded a couple years ago, but despite my procrastination in pulling it together, I think Kurt had some great insights on Jason's Portland era, who Jason is as a friend, and a lot of the great memories that Kurt discussed as it relates to the music itself. Okay, just two more episodes to go, and I have a special surprise song to end on, which I think fits in well with this episode because it's tied to the Lost Machine Orchestra tour that Kurt was a part of. It's a song that Jason played as the final song of each show, a song that was originally thought by many would end up on Blue Wave, which it didn't. Nevertheless, until it does get a proper recording release, we have this recording of Happy Little Kid all to ourselves. Enjoy.
Dead or gone to jail. Options, what the hell? Just somewhere in a dream, by a quiet stream, where everything ends well. But some things are just done. Thank you.
Machine Orchestra up here. I'd like to say thank you very much for coming.